We have a special treat today, and we are going to bring back our national anthem for one time only. We have a special guest today. Alex has been traveling the world. She's been in London. She's been at Berkeley training. She's been literally around the world for years. And she has a familiar last name, but we're welcoming her back to Chicago. And she is so excited to be back here. And it's Kim Dubuque's daughter, Representative Dubuque's daughter, Alex Dubuque, is going to lead us in the national anthem. So again, if you're able to, please stand and join us in an incredible rendition of our national anthem.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Will you come back to do it again? Let me help you out. Okay, we can all go home. Thank you. Please take your seats. There's a proud mother out there. Where is she? Representative Kim Dubuque. Thank you, Alex. We hope you'll come back to City Club. That was incredible. More than anything, we are so proud to have every one of you in this room. This is who moves Chicago forward in the right direction for the right reasons. And this cross-sector mix of Chicagoans is incredible. And it's proving that City Club is off to a great start this year when you all want to be in this room. Thank you. We are your club. We are your platform. We just try to bring the right folks together. And wow, did we do that today. That wasn't me. That was our panelists. That was Representative Kim Dubuque, who you're going to hear from in just a minute. But it's really important, I think, to go through some of those folks so you all know who you're with and what you can do when you talk with each other to move our city in the right direction. Thank you especially to our elected officials and public servants. I want to mention a few in the room. Alderman Samantha Nugent is here, Sam Nugent. George Van Dusen, a longtime elected official. Representative Carol Ammons is here. Representative LaShawn Ford is with us. Do we have any other representatives that I'm missing? Palmer. I'm sorry. Michael Crawford. Representative Crawford, thank you. Thank you, Representative Dubuque. If there's anyone I missed, either raise a hand up or you can give me a hit later, and I'll apologize. Thank you. Thank you to our elected officials. Thank you to our public servants. There are all sorts of great people here. Michael Anderson from the Chicago History Museum, the interim president, is here. Daniel Ash from the Field Museum. There's a recurring... Oh, Carlos Ramirez Rosa. That's right here from the Park District. Thank you. Sitting two doors down from Commissioner Chris Brown. Thank you to from the library commissioner. Great public servants and City Club speakers. Very much appreciated. And we always miss Brenda, so we have to mention her. there's a theme here, and I think as I was putting my notes together, it just so happened, and yesterday was Chicago's birthday, and we hosted, yeah, it was 189, we hosted along with Mayor Johnson and Dilla, historian, a few others at the old water tower. And one of the things that we did at City Club is we showcased some cool products that are young entrepreneurs, and they were mostly female-owned entrepreneurs. And we've been pushing some emerging leaders, and so many of them are women. And this city is built on so many backs of so many incredible women. This wasn't planned, but all these names I have here are all women, and that are doing incredible things in this city. Please let me just share a few of the names. Lynn Osmond is here. Kimberly Bears is here. Eleanor Gorski is here. Smita Shaw is here. Mary Clifford is here. Liz Lombardo Stark is here. Aaron Alleman is here. Mary Ellen Karen is here. Deb Kerr is here. Deb Witzberg is here, another great public servant. Jen Van Valkenburg. Nicole Benolkin, Gillian Darlow, I see Mara Georges. I could go on and on and on. I'm sorry to not hit everyone, but I want you all to get a sampling of who's in this room and who's making this city what it is. And it's our honor to have you all here and help move forward what's good about this city and what good is to come. Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm going to let our panelists, of course, our incredible leaders. I'm going to let my co-host here today get into their bios and their and their introductions. But thank you for being here. Thank you to all the institutions. I mentioned our board earlier. The Sheds here. We also have Broadway in Chicago, Lou Raisin. These are institutions that make Chicago what it is. And there's so much more to come, so much good to come. We appreciate our role in just convening all of you. So thank you for that attention. I'd like to now introduce, like I said, my co-host, because she really pulled this all together, as you all do for us at City Club often. You help give us ideas and keep those coming. You also give us questions. I have three of them for if this wraps up on time. If you have any more, just find me, and I'll try to ask them at the end of the panel. But please, for now, join me in welcoming the representative from Illinois' 5th District on Chicago's South Side. She's the chair of the House Museum on Arts, Culture, and Entertainment, former president of Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, and a longtime partner and supporter here at City Club. Please join me in welcoming the mother of Alex Dubuque, Representative Kim Dubuque. Kim Dubuque. And if we could have our panelists come on up as she's going to make these introductions, but might be a little easier to have you come up now. And we'll hear from all of you in a minute. Thank you, Representative. You, whatever you'd like. This is ready for you if you need to.
Okay.
All right. You can go ahead. I'll just guide everybody here.
Good afternoon, everyone. I also have to say, not only am I the mother of Alexandria, I'm the mother of Julian, who happens to be here. So, Julian, please wave. Because And I also have to give a shout-out to my staff, Dean and Omar, as well as the staff of all the museums that help us put this together. We could not have done it without you, so thank you for all of your work. And I'll just give some brief remarks, and then we'll get into the panel. Thanks for being here, and thank you especially to our extraordinary panelists for the work that you do every day to strengthen Illinois through arts, culture, and education. Arts, museum, and cultural institutions are not peripheral to our economy. They are foundational. They drive tourism, they create and sustain jobs, anchor neighborhoods, attract talent, and shape how Chicago and Illinois are perceived nationally and globally. In many respects, they function as economic infrastructure just as surely as roads do. Yet too often, outdated narratives obscure the real strength, safety, and vitality of our cultural ecosystem. The truth is, Illinois is home to world-class museums, performing arts, venues, public art, and cultural organizations that rival any city in the world. And these spaces are not only sources of inspiration, they are engines of economic growth. Culture matters, perception matters, and perception can either propel growth or hold us back. That's why today's conversation is so important. It's about leadership and vision and being proactive, not reactive. When we invest in culture, we're not simply funding programs, we're strengthening Illinois' competitiveness and reinforcing this state as a place where people, ideas, and businesses can grow. And culture already is proving its value. Chicago's theater district generates roughly $750 million in economic impact and draws more than 1.5 million visitors each year. Millennium Park welcomes nearly 25 million visitors annually and contributes more than $300 million to our economy. Because arts and culture do more than entertain, they build belonging, they create shared experiences, and they elevate communities. And in moments of uncertainty, they help define who we are. And at this moment, when parts of our history are being challenged and politicized, museums and cultural institutions play a particular role in preserving truth, safeguarding memory, and ensuring that the next generation know where we've been and what to look forward to. It brings to mind Daniel Burnham's enduring charge, "Make no little plans. They have no magic to stir men's blood." Chicago has never been built on small plans, and neither should our cultural institutions. And I got that from meeting with Lou Resum, founder of Broadway in Chicago who shared his bold vision for the Chicago Cultural Stadium. Okay, Illinois has a talent, we have the institutions, we have the legacy. The question is how to build on that foundation with intention for the next generation. So I am honored to introduce my panelists. Dr. Julian Siggers is the president and CEO of the Field Museum. Dr. Siggers leads the Field Museum, one of Illinois' most iconic institutions, and a global leader in research, education, and public engagement. James Rondeau is the president and art director of the Art Institute of Chicago. James Rondeau oversees the Art Institute of Chicago, one of the most celebrated art museums in the world, and a cornerstone of Chicago's global cultural identity. Nora Daly is the chair of the Illinois Arts Council. She leads the Illinois Arts Council, helping to ensure artists and cultural institutions across our state continue to thrive. And finally, we have Peter Cottontail. And Peter Cottontail is a Grammy Award-winning producer and artist whose work highlights the power of Chicago's creative industries as both cultural forces and economic drivers. And I have to say, he's also the music director for Chance the Rapper. I have to get that in. So I'm going to start with Nora. When we say cultural capital, Nora, what are we really talking about for Illinois, especially across Chicago and our suburbs, and also for our community downstate?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being here. It really is an incredible room to be in. I see everyone that is making things happen across our state and across our city. So thank you for being here today. When I think about cultural capital, I think about kind of infrastructure. I think about cultural infrastructure. I think about our artists as entrepreneurs. I think of all of our cultural organizations, small and big, as economic engines in their communities. They help rebuild main streets. And we are businesses, and I think we need to kind of shout it from the rooftops that culture and arts aren't just like a nice to have, they're a must have. And so
thank you, Nora.
What else am I going to say?
Does anyone else want to add to that?
Yep, I'm happy to add to that. Not only are they businesses, but they are businesses that help other businesses. When you look at the collective museums in Chicago, they bring in far more people than all of the sports franchises combined.
Mm-hmm.
And moreover, it's a different kind of visitor, a cultural visitor. They will stay for longer in hotels, and they will go to more restaurants and bring in more money to the city.
All right. Thank you. That's amazing. I don't know if you all knew that. The cultural institutions bring in more revenue and economic development than our sports institutions. That's pretty amazing. My next question, I'm going to let any of you all take this. Arts and museums are often treated as amenities rather than infrastructure. What does the data tell us about the roles that cultural institutions and the larger arts community play in job creation, tourism, and local economic activity?
I think in a way it's been stated by you in your introduction beautifully and by Nora and now just by Julian that we are institutions that are economic engines, right? And, you know, in my institution, we're 1.5 million visitors a year. 50% of those visitors are tourists. And I think it's a super significant recognition that we contribute not only to excellence in the visual arts, but to the reputation and brand of our amazing city. And I also wanted to back up and echo Nora's introduction. This is an incredible room, and it kind of just, it makes you feel so incredibly proud to be a Chicagoan, to step into this room and see everyone who's here. And I think that the gathering of the panelists here representing politics, science, civic leadership, visual arts, music, it doesn't happen, right? We said that on the Zoom, but so I think this is a really unique moment to be in conversation. And I also just wanted to add that working in my role, how close and I am to Julian, I'm looking at my friend Chevy Humphreys from the Griffin MSI.
Stand up, Chevy, wait.
And there's no other city in the world where the leaders of a science museum, a natural history museum, and an art museum would be kind of besties. And we rely on each other. We talk to each other. And so there, today reminds me that there's a sense of community and collaboration and generosity that underlines this dialogue. So I know that's not directly to the question, Representative Duboclet, but I just wanted to put some of those thoughts out there.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you. Does anyone else want to add to that?
Yeah. I would love to add to that. I'm sorry.
Peter and then Nora.
Okay. Well, first off, happy Women's History Month. So, Nora, I think you should go first.
For sure. Isn't every month? Can we celebrate every month?
For sure. Yeah. Well, I'll be brief, though, just to piggyback off what you said. I would love to get in that group chat with you guys to become best friends so we can exchange some information. But our institutions are so powerful in Chicago. You know, it's the first time that people see art in Chicago if they're not from Chicago. Just somebody who's from the south side of Chicago, growing up, seeing the art that was there. There's people who go to schools here that aim to be in these institutions when they get older. So I think it's a platform that jumps off careers, that brings peoples to the city, and not to mention, I mean, entertainment. Let's talk about a huge festival that happens every year called Lollapalooza. It brings in so much money to the city, so much tourism. We have over 40 plus major artists that perform at places like Soldier Field, to all the way to the Metro, all the way to Remova every year, bringing in new opportunities for the city. So I'm pretty sure, like, Chicago is a place where diversity happens. Looking at this crowd, it's so beautiful. Diversity happens in such a way that brings in so many different levels of people to our city. So thank you guys for always supporting us and finding new ways to support artists in the city. And it's really up to us to kind of bring in more people, you know what I'm saying?
Thank Perfect. You. Nora?
I think it's really important for us to get that data, and I am thrilled that we just announced last week that Arts Alliance Illinois, and it's the city and the state, are working together on a full economic impact study for the creative sector. I mean, our last one was several years ago, but like any industry, we need to have the data in order to really tell our story. So that was just launched, and so that the initial data is going to be coming early summer. So stay tuned. I think that with that information, we will be all better emboldened to talk about the investments that need to be made. Just like roads and bridges, we need cultural infrastructure.
Thank you. Peter, I'm going to direct this one to you. You perform all over the world. Do you find that Chicago and Illinois are defined by negative headlines rather than what our truly lived experience is in Chicago? And if so, how do you overcome that?
Wow, that's a big question. All right. We're all Chicagoans here, so we all have watched the news. We all see the narrative, right? I don't need to be another person that repeats that narrative over and over again, right? So we can all just say what the world sees and what we really are, you know? We look at our streets every day. We live in our streets every day. We work in our streets every day. We send our children to school. I don't have any kids, but we send our children to school every day in these same streets that the news talks about. So if you just want to talk about the city without entertainment, oh, man, our narrative has gone so adrift. Because I look at the people and I see I'm in a Zoom with these guys or I see people working every day and it doesn't match up to what they say on the news. The results don't match up. Like, so I believe like there's been a broad misconception of what even goes on here daily, you know? So as somebody that's in the entertainment industry, of course, you know, I could stereotypically use my power to make good music or make music that promotes that, which I happily do with Chance the Rapper. We have a lot of songs that promote very good things in Chicago, but a lot of people make music just because or are in entertainment just because, and that's not necessarily their narrative. But one thing that we can always do to turn those narratives around are create more people like Chance the Rapper, like Vic Mensa, like myself, like Representative Kim, like anybody else that has had those opportunities needs to continuously have access to those opportunities to create new opportunities. And not just the old ones, the people who spearhead the opportunities need to create new opportunities to create more people like us. For example, a direct way that I was able to combat the narrative that we have in Chicago about our arts programs failing. Everybody is very familiar with that narrative. I'm a child of After School Matters. Yeah. My brother was a child of Gallery 37. I've been a child of Merritt Music, School of Music, Thorland Academy, United Voices, Chicago Children's Choir. And I mean, you guys are clapping, but really these organizations did the work. Like, we're clapping for them because they create people like us. And stop me if I'm going on too long because I can go on and on about this for sure. But I grew up, I got a project from a major company called Google in 2021. And from that project, I was able to donate $60,000 to Merritt Music or $80,000 to Chicago Children's Choir, which somebody from the South Side, I mean, let's think about it. You guys grow up thinking you're going to give $100,000 to somebody? No, that's real. You know what I'm saying? So I sit there and I'm like, wow, how does this moment get created again? And it was created because I had the pathways of after-school programs or arts programming. I had the pathways of being able to perform at the Art Museum with Nico Washington and Chance the Rapper. So if we can make those available to more people, that's how we directly get rid of the narrative because we create new narratives within that.
I'd love to jump in and say, you know, today is amazing, as we've said already, but we're Chicagoans up here talking to Chicagoans. But we actually know that our work is talking to the world, right? Like, this is not a closed loop. We are a global city, and our message is global. And when we talk about narrative and the ways in which I think some of us feel that we've lost control of the narrative that operates outside of our city, first of all, we as cultural institutions and cultural workers try to contribute to a positive identification of our city. But I learned just 2 days ago, my colleague Nora Gaynor, who's right in front of me, that a key crime metric in our city is the lowest that it's been since 1965. Why do we not have that message out there when we are battling against a federal administration who demonizes us? We're battling against rogue ICE agents. We're battling against the demonization of immigrants. This city is working. We've said that for decades. It's a city that I think maybe your dad coined that. The city that works. But I think it's so inspiring to be Chicagoans talking to Chicagoans, but we need to know that all of our work is focused on audiences beyond our city as well as our fellow Chicagoans. And getting together in a conversation like this, I think, underscores that the work that we all do matters, right? And
if I could just sort of add to that, James.
Please.
So to change a narrative, one of the easiest ways is to have firsthand people tell you that it's different. So at the museum, I'm sure you do the same, James, sure you do, Sammy. We really research our visitors, not in a creepy way, but the most powerful thing of when people visit Chicago, for people coming back to the museum, is for them to go back into their communities to say they had an amazing time here, which they inevitably did. They, you know, not just in our institutions, in your parks, Carlos, you know, it could be anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, we're so rich in our culinary arts, you know, our beautiful park systems. And I also think it's not only having your experience here, but our artists are our ambassadors. They are the best going out there. I mean, Alice, you were incredible. When you're traveling, you're representing Chicago, you know. And I think it's really important that we celebrate them. I tend to think sometimes our artists get celebrated in more national ways than we celebrate them here locally. I hope that we kind of lean into that because it is really kind of our critical voice is telling our stories and telling all the exciting things that are happening in Chicago.
So on that topic to my two museum presidents, how important is that first-time visitor experience in shaping the perception of Chicago?
Honestly, very important. Sorry to just jump in and say that. Very important that our first-time visitors get a taste of what Chicago is. You know what? This reminds me of a story that I had. I have a friend. This is so funny. She'll probably laugh if I said this. Her name was Whitney. She came to the city. I think she's from, Baltimore or something or New York. And she came here for the first time probably right before the pandemic. And, you know, she literally said to me, I didn't know her at the time. She DM'd me on Instagram and was like, hey, I'm looking for a good church home to go to. And my mom grew up, taking people in a van to church and carpooling, you know. Good times. But I was like, yeah, you know, I didn't really know her. So I picked her up and went to church. And then we went to a lot of places for brunch and a lot of establishments. And I look back now, she became a chef for one of our all-star basketball players. And she decided to stay here in the city because she loved the experience so much and she felt like it was home. I think that making people, we do a really good job of making people feel like it's home, for sure. I look at all the people in here, we work every day. I'm pretty sure everybody has about 5 or 10 projects that they have in their email right now.
Thank you, Peter.
I'd love to jump in on the
museum president's take
on the first-time visitor experience. I think there are 3 fundamental barriers to visiting our museum. The first is cost. The second is transportation. And the third is a feeling of welcome. On the cost side, the Art Institute of Chicago has the most free access of any paid art museum in the nation. There are absolutely dozens of ways to attend our museum for free. Transportation, we serve hundreds of thousands of CPS students every year, and we pay for busing. Just one example of removing the transportation barrier. And on the welcome front, we still have a ton of work to do. But I think more and more, our galleries look like Chicago. We want to reflect the demographics and the ideas and the values of our city. And I think we're trying to achieve that more and more. So when you come to our museum, you can find yourself more and more in our galleries. And so I think that kind of animates every day for me, the idea of cost barriers, removing transportation barriers, removing a sense of hospitality, welcome, and recognition, And this is the role. This is mission critical work. And I think we could do a better job of getting that message out. But I think more and more we're doing the work.
And on that third point about welcome, I think that one's really critical because, you know, Chicago is unique that you can come to our museums for 52 days a year for free. That's once a week. But what we have to shift is the perception of, are you welcome? Is this museum actually for me? And that's a lot of hard work because that means you have to move into the communities themselves for them to trust you and to feel that this is a place that is for every single Chicagoan.
And I'm gonna brag for 2 seconds. Since the pandemic,
museum director shocking.
Exactly. I have a captive audience. Since the pandemic, we've seen attendance from Chicago up every month, month after month, year after year. We're seeing between 40 and 60% growth, and the 10 zip codes that we see the greatest growth are from the South and West Side neighborhoods. We've pivoted our marketing strategy to be not in the loop, but in the neighborhoods. We've developed community partnerships that are not one-off, that are sustainable and lasting. And we're really seeing a profoundly meaningful increase in our service to audiences in Chicago from historically underserved areas of our city that we did not do a great job, you know, a decade ago or more. So I think there's real progress and a lot more to do, but I do feel like we've had great success, and I'm looking at this audience. I'm also seeing like 7, 8, 9 colleagues that work with me at the Art Institute who are actually doing that work every day. And so it's a pleasure to be up here to comment on our work, but also looking at my colleagues who are executing that day after day. So thank you to my colleagues.
Okay. When we look at our peer cities internationally, how do our institutions compare, measure up? What are our strengths? And what opportunities exist to deepen investment in culture and better support artists and creative communities? Whoever wants to take that. How about you, Nora?
I'll start, and okay. Everybody can jump in. I mean, I think the institutions of the city are as good as anywhere in the world. The only two that come close are D.C. and New York, but this is such a better city. So our stage is better, but, you know, the biggest problem for me is perception of something that isn't true.
Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure when one has the opportunity to travel outside of Chicago, particularly abroad. And more often than not, when I identify my place of employment, the person I'm talking to says, "Oh my God, that's my favorite museum in the world." Right? We are simply one of the greatest art museums in the world, and we are of and for Chicago. And so linking those two things of being, I mean, size does not equate to quality, but we are, Chicagoans may not realize this, we're the second largest art museum in North America. We have a footprint, we're 700 employees, and we're not just curators and art historians, we're chemists and scientists and carpenters and electricians and educators and teachers and lawyers, looking at the general counsel. And so there's just a sense of the feeling that what we can do every day is obviously be accountable to mission, to serve our audiences, to honor our collections, but to really leave at the end of the day making ourselves feel proud of who we are and what we do, and hopefully making others feel proud of their experience in a museum like ours. And so it really is a fundamentally civic, but again, global enterprise that we're all participating in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also think it's really important to focus on our 77 neighborhoods and all the amazing organizations that are throughout our city. Our storefront theater community to our theaters in the Loop. There's so many. I'm looking across this room. I see so many people here that are working in the neighborhoods, And really expanding and growing and building these partnerships. I think Chicago, we're so unique in that we collaborate. It was like talking about the museums collaborating. I think in Chicago, we not only collaborate amongst ourselves as peers, but we collaborate. It's government, it's philanthropy, it's business, it's civic leadership, and it's the organizations. And I think that webbing really allows Chicago to thrive, and without all those spokes at a table or on a wheel, we couldn't do it. And so we need everyone to come together and invest in the storefront theater and invest in the Field Museum and the Art Institute, invest in the spaces like After School Matters that create opportunities and amazing artists.
If I could kind of keep on that point of going into the neighborhoods, which to me equals inclusivity, what does it mean to expand access to all these 77 neighborhoods or across the city to different cultures and different neighborhoods?
I'm not sure if I totally answer your question, but
how do we include the entire city in our cultural experience? And for me, I'm thinking about my daughters and the children's choir. They had neighborhood choirs all over the city.
Yeah.
And so that allowed people from Pilsen, from Hyde Park, from the north side to be a part of the choir without having to come downtown to be a part of the choir.
Yeah, I do think that. I mean, I think all of the institutions, I think even the bigger, larger institutions, they're in communities. They're not just in there. And the Field Museum's global. I mean, you have programming throughout the world. So I think that we are really well poised. And I think a lot of this is just communication and getting out, getting the information out to people. There is cool stuff happening every single night in every neighborhood. And it's just about figuring out and trying to connect on where those things are. I mean, honestly, you could see dance, music, theater, musical performances, visual arts, galleries. We have all the assets here, and we just need to amplify them.
Right. I think, it's also maybe a bit of an overused phrase at this point, but it really does become mission critical to talk about meeting people where they are, right? Not just bringing audiences to the institution, but meeting everyone in the places that they are. And one of the examples that I'm particularly proud of is that we have artists in residence in all 81 Chicago public libraries, and that there are free membership cards that you can check out in every Chicago public library. I think that may be also an invention of the Daley administration, which you can credit. But it really is not just about how we serve individuals when they enter our front door. It's how we serve everyone in the places that they are. And I think, again, that there are significant metrics and partnerships. Chicago Public Libraries, Chicago Park District. We really have a kind of network that you're describing that does try to speak to every Chicagoan.
Now, Peter, we're going to do Q&A, but if you want to say something very quickly to that,
It's really awesome to hear you guys talk about the opportunities that are created for community, as we are all part of the community and the opportunities in order to fix the narratives that happen in Chicago. But, looking at this room, there's so much power in this room. So I really challenge everyone in this room to pick a narrative of a Chicago artist, organization, nonprofit, and just follow it. I didn't say give anybody any money yet. Just follow the narrative. That's how artists like Chance the Rapper was born. Thousands of people followed his narrative and decided to support him, what he was doing, whether it was music or philanthropic work. Pick a narrative. Follow it. That's how we keep people in the door. That's how we keep opportunities happening. Because as amazing as these opportunities have been, past tense, it needs to continue in the future. And more so, we have, for me and my industry, I have 80,000 new songs that happen on Spotify. Oh, I can never listen to them a week, for sure. But we need more opportunities that cater towards the people who release or bring artists to communities or bring people to our city, for sure.
I just want to jump in and say something about that somehow when you're in New York or Los Angeles, you're an artist. But somehow here we've self-regionalized again and again and again and say Chicago artist, right? This, we just state artist. Kerry James Marshall is not a Chicago artist, he's an artist. Chance is not a Chicago musician, he's a musician. And so I think we need to resist continually the kind of reflex of regionalizing our creative community with a kind of nomenclature like we're Midwesterners, or which of course we're proud to be.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we're artists. You're an artist. You're not a Chicago artist. And I just met Peter on Zoom 2 days ago, and I was learning about his credentials, like 6 Grammy, like incredible, incredible credentials. And I just thought to myself, how amazing that you're committed to Chicago. When I was saying that at the table, we were sitting next to each other just at lunch. I'm like, you could be in L.A. or New York or London or Paris, but you committed to Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's incredible, and I think we need to get those narratives out. But you're not a Chicago artist. You're an artist, right? And so I think we need to not self-regionalize.
And that is mainly because I believe in Chicago's growing infrastructure. And it's people like you guys that build that infrastructure for my kids and my kids' kids to have jobs and continue in this company and the opportunities that we make for our city.
We could listen all day. We got a few minutes. The questions are pouring in. Too many of you have my phone number, so I don't have any text. So first of all, thank you, Representative, for leading this discussion and getting us going. That was awesome. And I wanted to mention, Chevy, I did not realize you were here from the Museum of Science and Industry, Chevy Humphreys. Thank you so much. I'm sorry I didn't see you right in front of me. And then also, Kenya Merritt is here. How could I miss Kenya Merritt, our Deputy Mayor and Acting Cultural Affairs Commissioner? Who joined us yesterday and helped us organize the birthday party. So thank you, Kenya, for all that you do and for being here today with all that's going on. One of the questions was a great one, and this one, you keep your ears open. This might be a interesting for you. A number of mayors, we've been talking a little bit about mayors over the years, and by the way, this comes from Michael Dorf. I don't know where you are, but... Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Various mayors throughout histories have Chicago's history have drafted cultural plans for Chicago, signaling their administration's recognition of the value of public-private coordination for a unified cultural policy. Is it time for a new cultural plan?
Mm-hmm. Nora.
Okay.
Nora.
I actually think we...
Thank you for doing that.
Okay. I actually think there are so many exciting plans that have already been announced recently, and I think we got to really look at them and start to implement them. I was down last night at the Land School at the Esther Gates Project, hearing about, the Stony Island Corridor project that's happening. But then when we were there, there were multiple other community projects looking at 71st Street, 75th Street, plus this another one that was announced last night that's looking at Stony. I think we need to layer all of these exciting, already existing, plans and then kind of just start to execute on them. And I know that there's been some recent ones. We were last night, Deputy Mayor Merritt was there at World Business Chicago announcing the second phase of the 2050 plan. There is the Central Area Plan. There is the new Park District, Grand Park Plan. We have a lot of exciting plans. I think we need to just kind of look at all of them, get in a room, figure out what's happening, and to start to move forward. Because you can kind of get stuck on like, okay, let's do another 18-month plan. That's why I'm excited the economic data project is like 3 months, because you could sit there and study it forever. And we just need to start moving.
Great. And we'll commit as City Club to calling you and asking you all to come back to report on the progress, because it's great when we come back here a year later and things have actually happened, and 2 years later and then 10 years later. I mean, look at from Gallery 37 to After School Matters. We all know where that started, where that led to. right? And we can talk about it here after so many years. It's incredible. So as I said, Nora and everybody, we are at City Club. We are ready to keep these conversations going, and please keep pushing us on that. Dust off some of those plans and get some things done. Brian from the Shed had a kind of broader question. Representative, you may have some insight into this. I think I'm going to simplify it a little bit, if you don't mind. He's from the Shed Aquarium. But here at City Club, we talk about education, we talk about transportation, we talk about all these different issues, and they all compete for funding. And you've all hit on this a little bit. But specifically, state funding the arts. Not everyone agrees that that is the highest priority. Why should it be when there are so many different social priorities for our government funding? And I'm sorry, Brian, if I butchered your question, but I think that was the sense of it.
Well, I think it's important that you understand that you'd be surprised at how it affects all of the priorities, the arts and sciences. It, like, intermeshes with everything that people would tend to think, well, why aren't we thinking about the homeless? But in fact, there are solutions that are coming out of all our institutions that can help inform that. Mm-hmm. It's not an add-on, it's an absolute must. Yeah.
And I would say, to add to that, and we're very similar, the Art Institute, the Field, and Griffin MSI, state and city support is crucial to our overall fiscal health and our ability to serve audiences, our ability to maintain free hours, our ability to recognize how to make visits accessible. That said, state support is a little bit less than 4% of our annual operating budget. And I think that's pretty much true for MSI, Griffin, and Field. So we really cherish the Park District, Museums in the Park, Springfield support. We work really hard to maintain the confidence from our elected officials and our the supporters. To maintain that level of funding, but it's not 50%. It's not 60%, right? It's 4%. So we value it, but you have to invite our audiences to recognize that we have many, many other engines that are required to keep the doors open.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I think that 4-5% is about right, although I would add that with an institution like the Field Museum, it's a research institution as well. There are 150 scientists there working all over the world, and the federal money has gone with this current administration. It may come back, but there's a great deal of uncertainty about this.
If I can add, as the chair of the Museum and Culture Arts Committee, I think it's incumbent upon me and my committee to bring the significance and the importance of recognizing art and the importance of the economic impact that the arts have on our communities, and to make sure that whether that funding is 4% or 10% or 30%, that we continue to fund these institutions.
Yeah, I definitely
Thank
agree.
Thank you for that.
Sure. Just to bring it down to a simple level, I know artists that tour off of funding from the state, like grants. I know artists that literally tour the world off of those things and come back to Chicago and open up programs and bookstores for people who need it. So it's completely, like, it needs to be a full encompassing thing where we support our artists, like, at the top of our list, because they make things happen for our community on the forefront, for sure.
Speaking of artists, I didn't... Of course, I thought I recognized almost everyone in the room. Jamila Woods is here. Where are you? Say hello. Right. And I'd remember this. We grew up on the same block on Levitt in Beverly. So good to see you back, and good to have you at City Club. But we'll have to have you at a future program. So worldwide, world-known artist who happens to be from Chicago and from Beverly and the south side of Chicago. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Representative, for pointing that out. Okay, quick one. We all read the news. This is a little bit off topic. James, this is to you. Yesterday we noticed that the Art Institute trading floor is designated as a potential building or element that may not
be around for long. Is there a plan for that? Is that part of is that something that people should be concerned about?
First of all, I'm super happy to have that question, so thank you for whoever submitted that, because I think the narrative that's in the press is not fully accurate. We have no approved building plan. We have no approved plan to touch the trading room. When we think about access to our collection, it's 3,000 square feet of space that is largely a recreation, not original. It's about 95% recreation, 5% original. And we have vast amounts of our collections in storage that are not accessible to the public. So as an idea, as a concept, someday could we use that space to better serve our audiences? Again, but 5% of visitors come to the trading room. As an idea, it's possible, but right now it's purely hypothetical. Mm-hmm. So I think it's premature for Landmarks to come after us in this way with this narrative, I think, because it's again, hypothetical. And I think also there's a bit of a compromise in the narrative around historic preservation, which is so important in our city and in our world. And the case of the trading room is not an example of historic preservation, right? The only thing that's being preserved is a volume and a sense of an experience, both very important, no doubt, but it is not a historic site. It's a recreation from 1977. So I think it's just really important to get that kind of narrative out there, but also to say that we have actually no plans to touch it. Someday maybe, but not now.
Okay. Thank you for addressing that. You heard it here.
Thank you.
I think we have one more time. Rich Gamble asked a question about, and I think this frontline workers, you know, entry level that bring people into the museums, bring people into the arts, bring people into music. We heard your story, Peter, about, you know, starting at Gallery 37 and moving into where you changed the music landscape. Could you all maybe close out by talking about opportunities in arts? Maybe talk about whether it's your volunteers at your museums or docents or sometimes entry-level positions and where folks can go and how important it is to people's lives when they're on the front lines of these various institutions and industries.
So is your question, where's the pathway to get into this world?
Sure. What's a pathway that and how important are those front lines of folks when they come to, for instance, your organization? You come from out of town or you come from in town, you see a young person that gives you a big smile on the way in. That person eventually can become the president of the Field Museum, right?
Well, that's what happened. It is. I went to the Natural History Museum in London, and that was kind of it, which is why it's so important for museums like ours, the three we've been talking about, to really focus on school visits, internships, summer camps. These are all pathways of possibility. As soon as they can see, like, I could be a botanist, I could be an Egyptologist. It just opens up things that they would never get unless they visited us. Everybody in my museum, regardless of the discipline they study or whether they're visitor services, probably are doing that because they had a positive school visit. And so I think those are unbelievably important.
Yeah, I mean, I will second that. I think it's exposure. It's early exposure. It's programs that all the museums and the parks have of bringing young people into their spaces. I think it's critical. Obviously, I'm a big lover of After School Matters, and all of that happens, but it's all of our teaching artists that are in the schools. It is sitting for your first time in a theater, and just, you know, the magic and wonder that your experiences are there. So I just think it's exposure, and I think we need to kind of also make sure that we're investing in our programs, investing in our schools, and providing that access, because you never know that one day in either walking the halls of a museum or sitting in a theater or being in an arts program, what that can lead to.
I think also just want to jump in, and it's a sort of a huge topic that we don't have time for.
We might need a new panel for this, by the way.
Something that we've been engaged in the last 10 years is really trying to scrutinize a kind of dependence or over-dependence on unpaid labor. Mm-hmm. There is no equity or fairness in unpaid labor. And that message was botched by us and also by the media. But I think, you know, one example, I'm looking at my colleague Emily Fry, 80-some internships annually, but that's about the right number. And a number of years ago, we converted every single internship to paid rather than volunteer. So students can come to the museum and earn a living wage in an internship program rather than asking them to volunteer unpaid for the summer. That obviously completely changed the demographic of who could come to a summer internship, for example. But our narrative started with pay equity, but then it leads to access. It leads to inclusion. It leads to lots of other things. And we did the same thing some of you might have read about, converting our in-gallery learning to paid professional educators who now teach in some five languages, who work in American Sign Language, who specialize in neurodiverse learners. We are now a cadre of paid professional educators that are receiving hundreds of thousands of Chicago Public School students every year. So it's been a bumpy road for us, but I think part of the bigger narrative around access and inclusion is about leaving a dependence on volunteer labor behind and addressing pay equity.
Yes.
This is probably my favorite question.
And I can't wait to hear all of it, but we do have about 1 minute.
Yeah, cool. I'll try to keep,
the trains on time.
For sure. Nora, I completely agree. We have to catch them early on. Everybody should take note of that. We have to catch them early on. Like, that is how we put the passion in the kids' eyes to grow up and become somebody like Rosa, or become somebody like Nora, or become somebody like Representative K. So we need to catch them early on. Yes, we do need paid opportunities. We do need internships that lead to paid opportunities. Because how can we create a workforce without any money? Like, how can we create a job like without any money for the job? So we do need that. But we also need new things. I can't stress this enough. Like, the people that are in the museums need to look like the people who are in the city. I as an artist cannot have a goal to look forward to if the people don't look like me in the museums. So I want to aim as an artist to be a part of these institutions. I was saying at the table earlier, it's very simple. Like, the institutions are the chariots and the people who work are the horses. If we don't feed the horses go to L.A. The horses go to New York. If the chariots are not tended to, then we have institutions that are run down that don't bring money to the city. So I just challenge everybody, like I said, pick a narrative, follow it, make somebody your passion project, and then enhance and amplify them. That is how we help our city, for sure.
Amazing. What do you say? We have a part two? That's incredible. I happen to know who asked that question. Was started as a theater usher and became one of Chicago's great civic leaders. So there's so much opportunity, as we all know, in arts. There's so much... There's so much to talk about. We can dive deeper into so much of this. I'd love to welcome all of you back. I especially want to thank you, Representative, for bringing this to us, for helping lead this discussion, and for help bringing this room together. It's absolutely incredible. There's so much more to come.
I have to give credit to my staff.
And then, of course, Dean, your staff, they've been very helpful. So much more to come. Please keep an eye on our website. We have lots of programs coming. Valerie Jarrett is next. She's on March 10th, and I'm sorry it is sold out, as all of our programs have been. We're going to be doing more on performing arts, talking with Christina Rice, Global Girls. There's so much more to come. And we hope that you all continue to bring your ideas to us. Please keep coming. That's most important. Get in this room. Become a member if you're not. Get in the room. Do your part to make this city better, like every one of these panelists have done. Thank you again for being here at City Club. You're welcome back anytime.